Good evening. In the news tonight, a suspect in the New York and New Jersey bombings has been apprehended.
We have every reason to believe this was an act of terror.
The UN is hosting a summit on refugees and migrants.
The bigots and deceivers in opposing greater responsibility sharing promote rupture. Some of them may well be in this hall this morning.
With these and other stories in New York, I'm Linda Perry, and this is some of the news for Monday, September 19th, 2016. Law enforcement in Linden, New Jersey, apprehended Ahmad Khan Rahami in a shootout this morning. Officials say Rahami is linked to Saturday's bomb blasts on the Jersey Shore and in Manhattan. The suspect is being treated for a gunshot wound. Two officers were also injured, but their injuries are not life-threatening. 26-year-old Rahami lived above his dad's restaurant near Newark Airport. The only run-in with police, which was released, is that his family complained they were being targeted over the restaurant's late-night hours because they are Muslim. In New York City, law enforcement officials held a news conference sharing what they could about the arrest and the progress of the investigation. New NYPD Commissioner Jimmy O'Neill says now that the suspect they believe is responsible for the bombs in New York and New Jersey is in custody, law enforcement moves on to other aspects of the case. Did he act alone, and what were his motivations? O'Neill says it's very much an active case.
Our efforts were successful, thanks to the brave police officers from the Linden, New Jersey Police Department. They captured this dangerous individual, Ahmad Khan Rahami, right here. However, in doing so, we had two police officers that were injured out in Linden, New Jersey, and I wish their best and hopefully a speedy recovery. This is another example of what law enforcement does every day. They put themselves in harm's way to protect others, regardless of the risks, and this all started on Saturday.
O'Neill says the success is the result of the cooperation of all agencies and the public.
So obviously, a lot has happened over the last 40 or so hours. I want to add my comments to those of the people standing behind me.
U.S. Attorney for the Southern District, Preet Bharara.
Condolences to the officers and the victims in New York. I believe there's going to be a charge probably lodged based on the shooting of the officers in Linden, New Jersey, by the local prosecutor there in Union County. While that is pending and the defendant is being held, you can expect that the U.S. Attorney's Office here, perhaps the U.S. Attorney's Office in New Jersey, will be working to put together as comprehensive and thorough a collection of allegations as makes sense. We are not rushing against each other to bring charges. We have been all racing together to try to catch the perpetrator here, and that's now been done. But we're going to take a lot of care and a lot of time to make sure that if we bring charges federally in the Manhattan District Court, that we do it in a way that's careful and thorough.
Surveillance video shows that two individuals picked up a bag with the bomb, which didn't go off on 27th Street in Manhattan. Chief of NYPD Detectives Robert Boyce.
We have a video of two persons who picked up the bag, took the device out of it, and then walked off with the bag. Now, we went back to see where they came from. They looked like they were two gentlemen just strolling up and down 7th Avenue at the time. We have no information that would link them to this at all. However, we still want to talk to them, obviously. We're considering them witnesses right now. Once they picked up the bag, they seemed incredulous. They had actually picked this up off the street, and they walked off with it. So we'll find out. We'll put their images out. Hopefully, we can get them identified.
Why they wouldn't have notified law enforcement is another unanswered question. New York City's Mayor Bill de Blasio says it is a rapidly unfolding situation. In more information.
More information is coming in all the time. We have so much more information, obviously, than we even had a few hours ago. Based on the information we have now, we have every reason to believe this was an act of terror. We will be going into some detail, and there is still a long investigation ahead. But now we have, as I said, every reason to believe this was an act of terror.
You have to understand how to reach a terrorism charge in a criminal investigation, says the NYPD's terrorism expert, John Miller.
You have to understand the difference between a bomb going off in a crowded street in New York City is a terrifying act. Whether that's an act of terrorism requires that you find out who did it, which is something we didn't know at the early stages of yesterday. and then why they did it in order to meet the statutory requirements. The basic definition of terrorism on the federal law side is the use of fear, violence, or intimidation, or the threat of, to achieve political or social change. From the outset of this case, our first priority was to understand who was behind it and to identify that person and bring that person into custody. Our ability to see through the rest of that optic, which is why they did it, what was behind it, and whether it was terrorism, required us first to understand who did it. The searches conducted last night, the interviews being conducted today, the broadening understanding about the suspect who's in custody right now for the shooting of a police officer or police officers is going to be the part that brings the elements forward that will eventually result in a charge, and it will be laid out in those charging documents. So that's kind of the process piece of how do you get from there to terrorism. And the amount of progress that was made in 24 hours between the work of the JTTF, the Intel team, some extraordinary work by the Detective Bureau in terms of surging the number of people to do the video canvas in the immediate area and then expand that out in concentric circles to develop the elements that brought us to the identification of this person were all the steps to get us there. So that's a question that, as Bill Sweeney has said, it'll be part of the investigation, but those pieces are still being gathered.
Bill Sweeney with the FBI, who was tight-lipped, said the fact that the bombing suspect survived is good from the law enforcement standpoint and that we didn't lose a life. He said we have to build out from that picture. Meanwhile, President Obama is in Manhattan. He spoke about the bombing in the city and the attempted attack in New Jersey and the stabbing in Minnesota over the weekend.
I've been monitoring the situation closely and receiving frequent updates from my team, and I've just been briefed again by FBI Director Comey. In addition, I've had a chance to speak with Governors Cuomo and Christie, as well as Mayor de Blasio. We've seen what was apparently a pipe bomb go off in New Jersey, in Seaside Park, where it could have seriously injured our U.S. Marines and spectators who were there for a race. The bombing in the Chelsea neighborhood here in New York injured more than two dozen people. We are extremely fortunate and grateful that nobody was killed. And our prayers go out to all of those who have been injured. We want to wish them a speedy recovery. I especially want to commend all the outstanding police and first responders in both New York City and New Jersey for their extraordinary professionalism and their quick response, which surely prevented even more people from being hurt and ensured that people got assistance quickly. Now, the investigation is moving rapidly, and as is my practice, I'm going to leave it to the FBI and law enforcement to provide details. I think everybody is aware at this point that there is a person of interest who is the focus of the investigation, and the FBI can give you further details in terms of how that is proceeding. I told Governors Cuomo and Christie and Mayor de Blasio that they and their teams will continue to have all federal support as they move ahead with their investigations and tracking down every lead and working to keep the people of this city and of this region safe. Law enforcement is asking for the help of the community. And so to everybody in this region, I want to repeat what we've said before. If you see something suspicious, then you need to say something. Contact local law enforcement. In the meantime, I would ask that the press try to refrain from getting out ahead of the investigation. I am extraordinarily happy with the cooperation that's been taking place between the FBI and state and local law enforcement officials. They are moving smartly on this investigation. It does not help if false reports or incomplete information is out there. So try to, as much as possible, stick to what our investigators say because they actually know what they're talking about. Meanwhile, I know that the United Nations meetings here every year already create an additional workload for New York. But given the UN meetings, we also have a particularly high level of federal resources here to help as needed. We're going to make sure that everybody is working together seamlessly as one team to get to the bottom of what happened, to find those responsible, and to make sure that justice is done. Meanwhile, while all this is going on in New York and New Jersey, we're also focused on the stabbing attack at the shopping mall in Minnesota. At this point, we see no connection between that incident and what happened here in New York and New Jersey. Our attention there is on the people who were injured. And again, we are very grateful that no one lost their life. Thanks to the quick action of a brave off-duty police officer, the suspect was killed, and we avoided more people being hurt. I had a chance also to speak with Governor Dayton this morning. I assured him that we will provide all the assistance that he needs in the investigation. The FBI is investigating the Minnesota incident as a potential act of terrorism. We will direct the full resources of the federal government to make sure that the investigation goes forward aggressively. And finally, I want to take this opportunity to reassure the people in this city, this region, and Americans across our country that our counterterrorism and law enforcement professionals at every level, federal, state, and local, are working together around the clock to prevent attacks and to keep us safe. They are the best of the best. Over the years, they have thwarted many plots and saved many lives, and we are incredibly grateful for their service today and every single day. We will continue to lead the global coalition in the fight to destroy ISIL, which is instigating a lot of people over the internet to carry out attacks. We are going to continue to go after them. We're going to take out their leaders. We're going to take out their infrastructure. They are continuing to lose ground in Iraq and in Syria, and later today I'll be meeting with Prime Minister Abadi of Iraq to discuss the need to sustain that momentum. As we take away more of their territory, it exposes ISIL as the failed cause that it is, and it helps to undermine their ideology, which over time will make it harder for them to recruit and inspire people to violence. And we're going to continue to enlist tech companies and community and religious leaders to push back against online extremist content and all messages of hate.
President Barack Obama on the recent attacks in New York and New Jersey. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. A vigil was held outside the United Nations last night in recognition of children who have lost their homes, children who are migrants and refugees. This was in advance of the UN General Assembly, which began today in New York City with leaders from 180 nations. The UN General Assembly held a summit today to come up with a blueprint for a better international response to the movement of refugees. One young Syrian refugee and activist said, "Too often, inaction is the only thing the international community can agree on." Matthew Wells has more.
I declare open the high-level plenary meeting of the General Assembly on addressing large movements of refugees and migrants. Can we have order at the edges of the General Assembly, please?
The new president of the UN General Assembly, Peter Thompson, calling to order a meeting designed to address the plight of 65 million people on the run, many due to conflict in the Middle East. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon hailed the so-called New York Declaration, adopted in the General Assembly Hall on Monday morning, as the means by which the rights of refugees and migrants can finally be secured.
I call on world leaders to join this campaign and commit together to upholding the rights and dignity of everyone forced by circumstance to flee their homes in search of a better life. This summit shows that we can find common ground. But the summit will have a real meaning only if We all honor the promises made here today.
The head of the UN Refugee Agency, Filippo Grandi, laid out the substantial gains and commitments contained within the declaration.
The New York Declaration marks a political commitment of unprecedented force and resonance. It fills what has been a perennial gap in the international protection system, that of truly sharing responsibility for refugees in the spirit of the United Nations Charter.
But taking to the podium, the UN Commissioner for Human Rights, Zayed Raad al-Hussein, began his remarks saying that this should not be a comfortable summit. He said the refugee crisis was being fueled by race-baiting bigots, wielding power through division and fear.
The bigots and deceivers in opposing greater responsibility sharing promote rupture. Some of them may well be in this hall this morning. If you are here, we say to you, we will continue to name you publicly. You may soon walk away from this hall, but not from the broader judgment of we the people, all the world's people.
If world leaders today are unable to find a solution for the refugee crisis and the Syrian crisis, then this summit is no different from all other conferences.
But it was refugee Mohamed Badran who made the most forceful call for an end to empty rhetoric and the beginning of a genuine international effort to stem the tide of those fleeing war, especially from his native Syria.
Let us hope that today's summit will be different and that international community is going to share responsibility for refugees and agrees to take action on the following: to end the violence now in Syria and protect civilians, to guarantee safe routes for all refugees and to stop put our lives on hold, to empower refugees to lead projects for refugees so that we can help our people.
Refugees like his small group in the Netherlands were doing what they could, he said, and now it was the turn of member states to step up too.
And at the UN, William Lacy Swing with the International Organization for Migration, founded in the wake of World War II, spoke directly to media.
We need your help in trying to address the very poisonous public narrative right now on migration, where migration has become a negative word, when in fact we're standing in one of the cities which was built on the backs of migrants and with their talent. We know that. And yet, we're now branding migrants as potentially terrorists or criminals or bringing in disease. We've got to get rid of those stereotypes, get demythologized the narrative, and try to get back to basics.
The International Organization for Migration has joined the United Nations. Carol Stern is president with UNICEF. She says we have reached a critical point where there are more people on the move than any time since the end of the Second World War.
We are all haunted by the image of three-year-old Aylan Kurdi. His tiny body was washed up on a beach in Turkey after drowning at sea. Or more recently, by five-year-old Omran, who sat stunned and whose bloodied face we looked at as he stared out from an ambulance after his home in Aleppo was destroyed and his 10-year-old brother Ali was killed. Our compassion for Aylan, for Ali, for Omran must be matched with a compassion for all the millions of children who were forced to risk their lives, to risk being abused, to risk being exploited, to risk making a dangerous journey from their homes, homes that are no longer safe for them.
Stern says we have to remember that regardless of the reasons children are on the move, whether they are fleeing conflict, violence, poverty, hunger, that what's important to remember is that they are children first. With others last night, she held up candles outside the UN to remind world leaders and President Obama to put refugees and migrant children first, this during the UN General Assembly.
We are shining a light for children who unfortunately are not able to shine it themselves. Children who have lost their lives too young, children who are suffering tonight, children all over the world. And I would ask if we could just have a few moments of silence.
There's another photo besides the one the UNICEF chief mentioned. It shows a boy standing in front of his school flattened to the ground, this after a bombing in his village in Aleppo. And the lack of education for young people is another major concern. The UN says globally some 263 million children and young people, mainly in Southern Asia and Sub-Saharan Africa, don't go to school. And a new report is out. It seeks to provide a roadmap for achieving educational opportunities for children and young people. Gordon Brown heads up the International Commission on Financing Global Education Opportunity.
The demand for education is the civil rights struggle of our generation. Unless we can find a way of preventing girls being subjected to child marriage when they should be at school, boys and girls being forced into child labor when they should be at school, trafficking, and girls being denied rights simply because they are girls, then we are failing a whole generation of young people.
And 25 million will never even have the opportunity to begin their education. And in Syria, humanitarian convoys are still unable to deliver aid. This is according to Stephen O'Brien, the UN Humanitarian Affairs Coordinator. Deanne Penn reports.
In a statement, Mr. O'Brien said he was pained and disappointed that the trucks have been unable to cross the border from Turkey. He said the convoy was to be the first of two that would have carried flour and other food supplies sufficient to feed some 185,000 people for a month. The UN aid chief hoped that parties to the conflict in Syria and those with influence over them would see the convoy as an opportunity to move forward. He pointed out that millions of Syrians are in hard-to-reach and besieged locations. Mr. O'Brien said humanitarian aid must remain neutral, impartial, and free of political and military agendas. Deanne Penn, United Nations.
Meanwhile, Jordan's foreign minister is lashing out at wealthy countries that have not taken in even a handful of refugees. He said his country is hosting 1.3 million from the Syrian conflict, equivalent to 20% of Jordan's population. This while larger and wealthier countries have not even received a handful. He says the plight of migrants from the seven-year Syrian conflict brought shame on the international community and called for more funding to help Jordan bear the cost of hosting the refugees, expedited resettlement of refugees in third countries, and a political settlement to the Syrian conflict. On the margins of the General Assembly, President Obama is hosting the Leaders' Summit on Refugees. This alongside co-hosts Canada, Ethiopia, Germany, Jordan, Mexico, and Sweden. They will appeal to governments to pledge significant new commitments to refugees. And finally, Wells Fargo, where millions of fake accounts were created, has replaced the financial officer who was in charge of policing accounts. This in advance of a Senate hearing, which begins tomorrow, on aggressive sales tactics used by Wells Fargo employees. This led to the $185 million settlement package last week with federal regulators. Rebecca Miles has more.
Five senators called for the committee investigation into the bank's practices that pushed thousands of Wells Fargo employees to open as many as 2 million accounts that customers never authorized. Scheduled to testify at the hearing are the bank's CEO and the director of the Consumer Financial Bureau. William Black, an associate professor of economics and law at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, told the Real News Network missing from the news accounts about the fraud and theft committed by Wells Fargo are all the customers and employees who blew the whistle on the practice that had employees trying to meet quarterly goals with the ultimate goal of having six accounts open for each person. No one at the bank's management was held accountable in the settlement or lost their job or was sent to jail because the bank settled before the case went to trial. However, customers and employees sued the bank over these practices 3 years ago. Customers were held public protests outside the bank to warn of the practices, and 5,000 employees lost their jobs, with the bank's management referring to them as fraudulent employees. There is also little said about why the bank needed to do what they call cross-selling, where an employee was trained to try and sell you other Wells Fargo products, like a credit card. Was the bank creating these financial accounts to satisfy Wall Street investors to constantly show rapid growth each quarterly report, even though the practice was fraudulent? Rebecca Miles, WBAI News, New York.
And that's the WBAI Evening News for Monday, September 19th, 2016. The news was produced with Deanne Penn, Matthew Wells, and Rebecca Miles. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.